This is part one of a two-part deep dive into one of Gordon Lightfoot's songs. The second part of this episode will be released at a later date. I hope you enjoy the conversation between me and my guest. Thank you in advance for listening.
The first guest of the evening is truly a poet. He's an artist. He is a friend and an inspiration to anyone who I think who has ever played the guitar or tried to write poetry. Would you please welcome Gordon Lightfoot?
Never had much to say. He traveled alone with no friends. Like a shadowy ghost at dawn, he came and he went. Through the woodland, swiftly riding, to the young maid he came gliding, where she'd run to meet him by the garden wall. This is Carefree Highway Revisited, the show that celebrates the work of Gordon Lightfoot song by song, a proud member of the FM Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mike Messner, and along with me today are two fellow Lightfoot fans from Bettendorf, Iowa, making their fourth appearance on the show, Kevin and Aaron Hester. Kevin and Aaron, welcome back to Carefree Highway Revisited.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, what is new with the two of you since the last time you were on the show? Any family news, any musical news, anything you want the audience to know about?
Oh, not really. I've been kicking around a few ideas for a book that has to do with the Gibson Dove guitar as it passes through families.
Oh, that's clever. I like that. Yeah. Keep me posted on that.
Well, really, I can send you what's happening so far with it. And then last week, we just saw a group that we love to see, Dave Killinger and his group called the Carefree Highwaymen. And guess whose music they do?
Yeah, Gordon Lightfoot.
You know, I would never have guessed that. So did you tell them about my podcast when you went to see them?
We have talked to Dave about that. Yes, both of them. And Dave's kind of shy about doing things. But he actually had an interesting story. He went down to see Gordon Lightfoot in Florida about 40 years ago. And he said, as he was hearing a concert and driving back home, he kept hearing this voice, "You have to buy a guitar so more people will learn about Gordon Lightfoot's music."
And he did.
And he did, yeah.
So kind of a premonition of what was going on, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And Dave does sound like...
He sounds just like Gordon Lightfoot. Yeah. Deep voice and things, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like Gordon in the 70s, yeah.
Fantastic. Well, I'm glad you got a chance to see the show, and I hope those guys will be listening to this episode or another episode real soon.
We told them about it. We told them it's their fourth time, and every time we go see them, Dave dedicates Beautiful to us.
The song Beautiful, yeah.
And I know that we've talked in other episodes about the story that you have for that song. So that's really, really sweet of them to do that. Well, that's got to make you guys feel special.
Yeah, yes, it does.
Kind of like a date night for us, right?
Yeah. And they're from the Quad Cities. We see them like four times a year at the Grape Life, which is a great little place.
Yeah, it is.
All right. So for anybody who's listening, if you're in the Quad Cities area, now you know where to go and you know who to ask for. Well, today we wanted to talk about Miguel. I was not super familiar with the song before you chose it, but I really like it because it's a really nice story song, although it doesn't have a definite beginning, but it has a definite middle and a definite end. It's not overly arranged. In other words, he didn't have to bring somebody in to do strings for it or anything like that. And it's got a beautiful, beautiful melody.
Yes, it does.
As good a melody from a Lightfoot song, honestly, as I think I've ever heard. So what did the two of you like about the song?
I kind of like it because the finger picking that he does, it sounds so mysterious and it just... really, really beautiful melody. And then, you know, the bass comes in there and just the guitar playing in general. We feel like Red Shay.
Yeah.
We think that he was playing a high strung guitar in there. And then Gordon, you could tell all the finger picking he does, which is very good. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Rick, he was doing really good on the bass too.
And
the music, the guitar playing is really
the first phenomenal. Time. So. I ever heard it. I thought there was a 12-string involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you read about it with the high-strung guitar, that would take the place of 12-string. And what I feel, basically, why do we choose Miguel? We think it's one of the undiscovered gems in the life of Kellogg. You said you never really were familiar with it. But I bet you're going to listen to him more and more now, aren't you?
Well, both me and my wife, because I let her listen to it, because she said, you know, what song are you going to be doing? And I sent her the link to it. I was here in the studio doing some stuff, and I couldn't really break away. But I said, here, you listen to this. And then I said, what did you think about the song? And she said, oh, my goodness, it was amazing. Thank you for sending
it. Yes. And one thing is, I mean, it tells a story, you know, with imagery. Gordon's great use of imagery. And then the guitars come in. If you hear it through headphones, it just totally envelops you.
Well, you had said on a Facebook post that to listen to it through headphones is an far different experience from just listening to it out of a speaker. Definitely. So
the headphones make it so different in the way you listen to it.
And the way I like to listen to it, if you're going to do it, listen to it the first time in both channels. The second time, listen to it on the right channel.
And the right and the left.
Which Gord's guitar, his finger picking guitars on the right channel. Mm-hmm. The bass is kind of centered left. And then Red Shay is doing all the little fills on the left channel. It's simply amazing.
Yeah.
And then after you listen to it each channel, listen to it again the fourth time as a whole. So you may have some homework to do.
Well, okay, I'll be ready for that next season. Do you have any anecdotal stories about the song, what it meant to either one or to both of you?
Well, I'm a fan of Western stories, and this fits right in with that. And when we come back to the origins of the song, I have a possible idea what it may relate to, but we'll share that later. Anybody you have shared it with, they go, wow, that is really something. It's almost a wow experience for them to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best story songs I've ever heard.
You're listening to Carefree Highway Revisited. We'll be right back after a word from a podcast partner or two.
In 1942, when the world needed a hero to fight the forces of evil, a woman had the courage to step forward. Her name was Helen Meeker. Her adventures took her across the United States and behind the lines of both the European and Pacific fronts. President Franklin Roosevelt trusted her judgment. Adolf Hitler put a price on her head. And in the face of overwhelming odds, she battled through everything that was thrown at her, dodged death countless times, and challenged the most diabolical figures in history. The star of more than 20 novels, Helen Meeker proved her grit and determination time and time again. And now the Long Highway Players bring the book series to life on the airways. These exciting dramas will place you in the middle of the action, immerse you in riveting drama, plunge you into unimagined intrigue, and confound you with dark mysteries, while giving you the opportunity to live adventures in a time when the fate of the world hung in the balance. Enjoy the exploits of Helen Meeker and follow author Ace Collins's In the President's Service series on That's Not Canon Podcast Network.
Hi, this is Audie Martello, the host of the Mostly Folk podcast, a 60-minute foray into the music we all love. You will hear newly released albums, classic folk, country, and bluegrass music, as well as some traditional music that may or may not be true to the genre. Sometimes irreverent, often opinionated, but always entertaining. You may even hear a radio magic trick every so often, as well as numerous interviews via Zoom and telephone with established as well as indie artists. Mostly Folk is available wherever you listen to podcasts and always at mostlyfolk.org.
Yeah, and Lightfoot has not written a lot of story songs, but the ones that he has written, they're more narrative emphasized than the music emphasized. And this one, I think, kind of turns that upside down. he incorporated a much more beautiful melody rather than just saying, okay, I've got all this stuff to tell you about what happened. And as I said, it's not a definite beginning the way that you think of maybe some other songs. I think of The Wreck, or I think of the Ballad of Yarmouth Castle, where you know it's a beginning, a middle, and an end. This one, you kind of are dropped in the middle of the story, the same way it happened in Bitter Green. But I don't think that detracts from it. I think if anything, it does make it more cinematic, because it means you have to imagine how this story really got started. Or if you don't have to imagine it, you have to wait until maybe a third of the way, half the way through the song to get some idea about how this started.
Isn't that really the way a lot of movies are portrayed, though? You know, you see a character and you learn a lot through flashbacks.
Oh, yeah.
You do that through flashbacks, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that. I mean, some of the greatest movies ever made deal with flashbacks, whether they're Westerns or not. By the same token, those can be, if you use flashbacks too much, it does get confusing. You know, whereas when you're doing a written story, the best kind of literature that you have is going to have a beginning, middle, and end. Not going to be, you know, okay, well, this happened 30 years ago. Now we're back to the present day. Well, this happened 20 years ago. Now we're back. Because if I were reading that, I would think to myself, shouldn't you just rearrange the chapters and go back where you came from? But that's just me. And that's the way that I think in terms of literature, if not about songs and movies.
Well, my input is that the song doesn't follow a linear time frame. The song starts out as we can get an image of Miguel being a secretive and ghostly figure, meeting with his young love and hiding in the shadows. So it seems like there's a lot of secretive stuff, I think, in there. At the end of the second verse, we know how he became who and what he is. And then the third and final verse tells us the heartbreaking ending of what has become of Miguel and his love. And Gordon accomplished this in a 4 minute, 13 second song. That's how long it was. So makes sense.
Oh, it totally does. Mm-hmm. So he told the story. He just didn't do it in a straight line. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's just not the traditional story song. When would be the best setting for you to listen to this? Or is there no better setting? You could just listen to this song anytime, doing anything in any place.
There's certain times to listen to so that you can focus on it and really listen to it in depth by listening it through ear headphones, staying and sitting at home with the headphones on to really listen to every detail, you know? It kind of helps you appreciate it more.
I mean, it's not, for us, it's not really background music, like Sundown or something can be. You know, you can be doing other things, hearing Sundown, but this one asks you to pay attention.
Right.
It does grab a hold of you in a way that maybe some of his more pop-oriented stuff doesn't. I mean, you could listen to Sundown, you could listen to Spin, you could listen to that stuff, even Rich Man's Spiritual, where it's kind of in the back and it's nice and it's fitting, but it doesn't kind of grab you by the throat and say, hey, sit down, shut up and listen to this. Which I think is what Miguel does. And to some extent, I think some of his other story songs do. Bitter Green, not quite as much, but I think some of his others do. For me, I could listen to it anytime doing anything. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a certain point where I say, no, okay, this is the soundtrack that I would want for this particular situation.
Right.
It's a beautiful enough song that I could listen to it, I think, anytime.
Actually, I would love to hear somebody do an instrumental version on acoustic guitar of it.
Without singing?
Yeah.
Oh.
Just to listen to the guitar.
Too. Yeah. Be kind of pretty. Yeah.
You know, if we had somebody who did that, like Roger Whittaker or Chet Atkins when he was around, God rest his soul.
Yeah.
That would be a lot of fun to listen to. As we'll talk later, I can't find any official covers of this song of any variety. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but huh, maybe that'll be my homework, is I'm doing a musical version of it. I can't find out a whole lot about this song's origins. It was only mentioned in the Jennings book one time. Some people have said that he wrote it while he was contemplating his divorce from Britta, although I don't really see a parallel between...
We don't see anything either.
Yeah.
Although he may very well have written it at the time that that was going on. On the Dylan album, Blood on the Tracks, every single song is about his divorce or the end of his relationship with his first wife. This is not Gordon and Britta being portrayed.
No, there's some songs that he has written that kind of, because he was going through that type of situation, that he wrote the song, like If You Could Read My Mind or something, because he was going through a difficult marriage and divorce. But other than that, I don't see that here.
I can't picture anything about that either. Maybe somebody had posted his comments on the wrong site. That is, those that had come to anything about that. You have seen the BBC concert, haven't you?
I've seen pieces of it. I haven't seen the whole thing.
Yeah, okay, but did you see the piece on McGill?
No, didn't see that recording, although I'm told that it's even better than the studio version.
It's pretty good,
but you can actually see the intricate guitar playing on that. Mm-hmm. But the way that is, it was, unfortunately, it was done in mono back then for TV and not stereo. Whereas, remember back in the 70s or 80s where the radio stations simulcast FM versions of the concerts?
Yeah.
Turn the channel, whatever, and listen to it simulcast. So things have changed now, but in that, as Gordon introduced the song, he was saying this is sort of patterned after the Alfred Noyes poem, The Highwayman.
Yeah, right. He was inspired by the poem, The Highwayman.
You're listening to Carefree Highway Revisited. We'll be right back after a word from a podcast partner or two.
250 and Counting is the podcast that walks you through American history one day at a time.
I'm Mike Messner.
I'm Claude Call.
Join us as we spend just a couple of minutes with you
each day
telling you about the events that took place exactly 250 years ago on that date.
You'll learn more about the big events
and the small events
that led to American independence.
Look for 250 and Counting in your favorite podcast software.
That's 250 and Counting from Acroasis Media.
Did you know we have a full podcast series that walks through Bob Dylan's entire professional career? It's great for newer fans or anyone who wants to take a thoughtful tour through the last 60 years of Dylan. It's called A Bob Dylan Primer, and it's a 16-part serial. Find it at fmpods.com or anywhere you listen to podcasts.
I mean, I can see a little bit. Some of the stuff, I see a correlation there.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also thinking it may have a correlation to another song.
It could be an homage to Marty Robbins, the El Paso, and then Ribbon of Darkness. I don't know.
Just remember, when Gordon was playing the coffee shops in the early years, he did cover of El Paso sometimes. Okay. I don't know if you knew that or not.
We were talking about that on one of the online groups, but I don't know if that conversation ever got resolved.
Yeah, but anyways, what happened is that who had the first number one song with the Gordon Lightfoot tune?
It was Ribbon of Darkness by Marty Robbins.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So as you play those together, plus you have the What's the Setting, Southwest, same place, and the guitars. Both have the Spanish-type feel of the guitars.
Uh-huh.
That's just my idea.
Maybe I'm wrong. I haven't played them back-to-back, but I think they're both tragic songs. Yes. But I got to say, although I really like the Marty Robbins song, this one is just a lot prettier. Although the Marty Robbins song, as I've said before, is a lot more contrived, is not the right word, but it's, you know, it has a beginning, middle, and end.
Yes, exactly.
To it, where this one has the middle and then the beginning and then the end. But mm-hmm. I like it musically better than Marty Robbins, even though they're both fairly simple musically. But I got to tell you, this one is a lot deeper. The only other thing I want to say about The Highwayman before we move on is that that poem was made into a song by Phil Oakes, and it appeared on his second album, which was called I Ain't Marching Anymore. And I've heard it just once, and it may be on a collection somewhere, and I'm sure I could find it online. But when I heard it, it made me appreciate the poem a lot more.
Yeah.
And it's probably something that I'm going to have to listen to of a summer night when I don't have to worry about getting up in the morning and going to teach teenagers.
Mm-hmm. It's on YouTube.
Yeah.
I listened to it today.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's dive into the lyrics here. And there's a decent amount to dig up on this. And we're going to leave out some of the lines that I think are not particularly relevant or that are repeated here the way we usually do. Never had much to say. He traveled alone with no friends. And Aaron, you kind of alluded to this. He's a loner. He's kind of mysterious. And that in and of itself makes him more intriguing. Because there's nobody else for you to focus on at that point. If you were talking about Manny, Moe, Jack, Larry, Curly, and Shemp all riding around in the dark, you kind of who's who.
Yeah.
So there's nobody there to distract you. So that by itself makes him more intriguing.
And there's nobody there to share his secrets.
Yeah. And he had secrets.
Well, nobody except his lady love, but there may have been things that he didn't tell her either.
Yeah.
Through the woodland swiftly riding, to the young maid he came gliding, where she'd run to meet him by the garden wall. Now, we should stop here and say that some of the lyric printings that I've seen, he uses the word gliding twice, which is a cardinal sin in poetry and especially in songwriting. So my sense of it, and Kevin, you may correct me on this because I think you messaged me about it. My sense of it is that the first part of this, through the woodland swiftly riding.
No. It's supposed to be gliding first and riding second.
Okay, but it is the two different words, not the word gliding twice. Okay, so I got the right idea. I just got them in the wrong order.
When we heard him sing on the BBC concert, we listened to his words and how he sang it. And he sang it as gliding the first time and riding the second time. He enunciated that very well.
Well, it's a brilliant rhyme, no matter what order you put
it is.
Yeah.
Definitely, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So through the woodland, of course, I've immediately thought of Don Quixote because that's the first three words of that song, although this was written long before Don Quixote came out. But it also reminds me of Romeo and Juliet, the Shakespeare play, not the Dire Straits song, because she has to go meet him by the garden wall. And what that says to me is if this guy was on the so-called up and up, if he was socially acceptable, if he was in the right social class, whatever, they wouldn't have to meet up by the garden wall. He'd be in the front door and they'd be doing tea and crumpets or whatever it is they did in that kind of society.
Right.
But he's obviously not the kind of person that this young lady's parents would have in mind, I think is the best way that I can describe it.
And we don't know this until the second verse.
We don't know it explicitly. Yeah, you're right. Right. Although just the fact that they're meeting by the garden wall. Well, why would you meet by the garden wall if you can meet in the living room or the parlor or something? Oh, my sweet Miguel, I will never tell. No one will ever know what I know too well. And I read an analysis of this someplace, and whomever wrote it said that what she knows too well, and by the way, I don't think she is ever given a name throughout the song, which may have been an oversight, but in any case, what she knows too well is the strength of his love for her and how that puts him at risk because he has to go through the woods, which implies that he's kind of hiding out on this journey. She can't publicly declare that love because it would put him at even greater risk. So this is a long and poetic way of saying, I'm going to keep this under my hat, that we're together, that we're having this affair, or that we are in love, or however you want to phrase that. They're waiting for me to cross the border, to swim the river, because I've done that before, to see my true love's smiling face 100 times or more. So to me, that means that whomever Miguel is, he's a risk taker and he's very brave. It's true that he's in love. And as Kevin, as you and I both know, okay, men in love will do crazy things. And women in love too, Aaron. I don't mean to leave you out, but Kevin and I.
No, that's okay.
But Kevin and I have both had that experience that he crosses the border to see his true love's shining face. And although it's not explicitly said where this is happening, I think it's probably safe to think that he is from Mexico and she lives in Texas.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And again, we don't know that for certain, but it's logical that it would make that way. And I see him as kind of a Joaquin Murrieta character. And if you're wondering who that was the origin of the character Zorro. Secretive character who's disguised, usually operates at night, on the side of justice and truth, etc.
Mass marauder.
Mass marauder. We're getting way down into the weeds of California history here, but that is where that legend began, is in old-time California before America took it over, when it was Mexican California, not Spanish, but it was Mexican California. That wraps up the first part of this episode of Carefree Highway Revisited. The second part of this discussion will be released very soon. I hope you enjoyed this conversation so far, and that you'll listen to the second part when it comes out. See you next time.